Yes, come ride your bike and dance the night away on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m. as we celebrate Prince's birthday with a mobile bicycle dance party. Roll around Portland with Diablo as we rock Pedal Palooza, dropping the Prince jams all night long, stopping to dance along the way. Again, that's Prince's birthday celebration on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m., beginning at his mural on 42nd and Prescott. More information can be found on the KBOO website under Community Events.
Is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I'm in the studio tonight with my friend Zia.
Hello.
Who organizes with Jewish Voice for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And the Portland State University Student Union.
Yes, our two faves.
So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the topic of the show, because if people who listen regularly are keeping track, you might say, hey, you already interviewed Jewish Voice for Peace. And I did. So I interviewed one of your comrades.
That was about like
Alana.
6 months ago, wasn't it?
I think it was around Christmas time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because or Hanukkah time, rather,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah.
I think
all
that
of the holidays.
I think that's when we were doing the Shabbat. So
yeah.
Jewish Voice for Peace does a radical Shabbat monthly.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and can you say what a Shabbat is?
Yes, I love talking about the origins of Shabbat, because if you look at the history of Shabbat, Shabbat is radical in its essence. So Shabbat is basically the Jewish day of rest. In the tale of creation, it was the day that the Lord, everything, whatever you believe in, spent the day of rest. And back
I love how flippant your idea of the creator is. The creator, whoever.
I'm like, whoever you believe in, because it could be so many different things.
It's so good.
Exactly. So in that area and that time, it was when the Jewish people and everyone at that point was enslaved. And it was at a time when there was no such thing as a weekend. There was a 7-day work week. People had no rights. People had nothing. So for the Jewish people to take this day of rest, it was an incredibly radical act. It was never before seen. And it was actually the origin of what the weekend that we know now is. It's like part of the origin story of it. So now the kind of thing that I translated to in the times that we're in, like we're still living under certain levels of that kind of oppression. Like capitalism does not want you to take a day of rest. Capitalism
wants
you to
be productive.
Exactly. You have to be productive 24/7. So the idea, like, not everyone.
Oh, and if you're in service, you have to pretend that you're happy about serving, which is sick, but go on.
Yes, entirely. No, but it's and
that's what emotional labor actually is, everyone. You
yes.
know what? We're not going to talk about that,
but it's an
people
important
overuse
tangent.
The word emotional labor.
They do.
Or misuse it.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't get into that. Please finish talking about the origins of Shabbat.
We will do our best today to not go on tangents, but no promises.
Everyone knows I only really interview my friends and comrades.
Exactly.
So I have a rapport with people, and I have a really
good
rapport
with Zia. But also, you're great at going on tangents, always. Anyway, so and now, in the current day, as we live under capitalism, not everyone can take the traditional Shabbat, which is supposed to be a day of no work. Like, even some people define that as even not even using machinery. But, like, even if you're just able to take, like, 2 hours to be in community, to be by yourself, to take reflection, to take space, to, like, check in with yourself, that is a radical act under capitalism. So we're still following that same kind of ideology of our ancestors, and we're putting it into the modern day systems of oppression that we live under. So that's one thing that I've really, it's just been like JVP PSU was started by
Jewish
me
Voice for Peace,
Jewish
Portland
Voice for
State University.
We love it. was started by myself and Alana Goldman around September of this year, and just the amount of people and the amount of like outpouring of support from the community has been such an incredible motivator. Like, it makes my heart so happy that we have just like regular people who come to our Shabbats every month and bring incredible food. Basically, what we want to do is building upon this idea of Shabbat as being radical, we wanted to bring in an educational aspect, because one of the biggest issues of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is that people are too intimidated. It's understandable why. They've been told over and over again by propaganda that it's too complicated.
They're very intimidating.
Yeah, but it's just that people have been told that it's complicated. There's a lot of history. There's just so much to it. They've been intimidated from learning more, which is a specific tactic. Like, that was so purposeful. It's not. not that complicated. It's not. So that's the thing. Like, that's one of our big goals for this year is about education. So that's where we brought it in. And what we do is each Shabbat, we focus on a different subject. And we want, like, I'm a big believer, like, especially because I was in the Jewish Student Union. I was inundated with the propaganda. I know how deceitful it is. So that's why when I hear a lot of, like, especially Jewish people who maybe saying something that they don't know or saying something that is off the cuff or something like that, I'm like, I know the propaganda that you have been inundated with your whole entire life. And this is what we're trying to do to counter that. Because so each time, I don't like to just stand and talk at people for forever. So we try to keep it short.
Well, that's what this show is for.
I mean, true. People love podcasts now. So maybe that's good.
Get on your soapbox.
But what we do is we have these presentations because I want to make sure that everyone feels like they have at least an equal footing to be able to have a conversation. Because if we just had a discussion without that aspect, like, so many people would just be quiet because they don't know whether they wouldn't feel like they had the ability to talk on this. So we just do kind of like an overview of a subject, some of the subjects that we've had, and we always have catchy names because you got to keep it interesting. So we've done Bye Bye Birthright, which is the one I think that Alana was talking about when she was on your show last time, because it was right before that.
Say what Birthright is, please.
Gosh, Birthright. So Birthright is the free trip that is given to anyone who even has a slightest drop of Jewish blood in you. Unless you're a POC, then they may not give it to you as much because they're pretty sneaky about that. Birthright is basically a free trip for any Jewish person in the diaspora. But if you look at the money that's behind it, it's pretty clear that it's a propaganda tool because most of the money is coming from the Israeli government. It's coming from people who want you to believe a specific thing about Israel. So even though they tell you that you're going to learn an unbiased approach and you're going to explore for yourself, we know from the people that have been on it and the people who have walked off it that that's not what you get. And my whole thing about it, and the reason why I'm so behind JVP National's campaign Return the Birthright, is that I don't need to go to a land where people are being oppressed to know that oppression is happening. I don't need to go to Flint, Michigan to know that their water has not been anywhere near safe for years.
Right. Whatever money it would have cost you to fly there, just donate it.
Thousands. And that's the thing. Yeah. It doesn't cost Jewish students money, and that's why they go. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't feel that it's moral to go take a trip because most of these trips are about partying. That's the thing that we'll talk about too once I got into what we're going to talk about in the show.
Yes.
But most of these trips are about partying. They go out in Tel Aviv, they get lots of alcohol, they have fun, and it's not ethical or morally reprehensible to me to take a trip to an area where people are being oppressed and to party, even if you're just going on one of the outdoorsy ones, because they have themes. They have cooking, they have outdoorsy, they have historical, they have all these themes. And it's just like to take a vacation to an area where people are literally like not only kicked off their land, but continually oppressed every day. That's not an area that you take a vacation to. That's not, even if you're not, you're trying to be apolitical, which you can't go to a place like Palestine and be apolitical. It's convoluted. And that's the thing. And they just don't know a lot of the time, which is why like JVP National started that whole campaign to talk to people about it and be like, listen, even though you think that it's just taking a free trip, you're engaging in a larger system here and you're engaging in something. And even if you're not meaning to, you're putting your stamp of approval on it because you're working with specifically the Israeli government and so many other people, like nefarious parties that have donated to these.
Are you implying that the Israeli government is nefarious?
I'm not implying. I'm implying nothing. The Israeli government already knows they don't like me. They see my Canary Mission profile. They don't like me. It's fine.
So I do want you to go back to finish talking about the themes that you mm-hmm. have, but can
I'll
you talk about Canary Mission?
Because that's one of our other Radical Shabbat themes have included a subject on Canary Mission, and our catchy phrase is Canary Mission is canceled. We have to keep it interesting for the people. But Canary Mission is this organization which, like, they're feeding off of the classic tale of, like, the canary in the coal mine, basically saying that they're the dog whistle to this, like, dark presence, this poisonous presence, which they're defining as the Palestinian activists. But basically, Canary Emission, their whole thing is that we're rooting out anti-Semitism and racism by basically creating profiles of anyone, both Jewish, mostly Muslim and Arab, people who are doing this kind of work. And they're creating doxing profiles where they put up all your social media pages, your place of work, everything. And basically, they want people to harass you. And the most...
And why? Why do
the
they?
Most horrible part? I mean, this is all about fear tactics.
Thank you.
All about mm-hmm. trying to get people to be scared out of this work and to be disengaged from this work. But the most like irritating part to me is that their whole thing is that we're rooting out anti-Semitism. But when you look at who is using this website that they are creating, it is white supremacists, it is Nazis who are using this site to find Jewish people and leftist activists to like intimidate them, send death threats, all this stuff. It's absolutely horrendous. And personally, like, my profile went up about a month ago. I put all my things on private and everything. But because I don't have a Twitter, honestly, I've been spared a lot of the hate. But I can't say the same for a lot of my other... Or, like, all of us got profiles within a month. Lana got hers back in December, but, like, all of us got ours recently. But everyone who has Twitter, they said that Canary Mission has a ton of followers, so they'll send tweets out and just basically be like, hey, go flood this person with a bunch of hate and like death threats and everything. And that's where it's just exhausting for people. And like, because I'm not on Twitter, I haven't received a lot of that, but at the same time, it's still just like, they, even though I don't see the daily stuff from my own pages, I do see it on our personal pages. And that's kind of connecting to what we've seen recently with our most recent Surrat. So the other themes that we've had, I'll just quickly list, was like about Gaza as an open air prison, and then just focusing more about like the oppression 101. That was like our first one. But no, and the reason that I'm here today.
Happy Pride. Well,
happy Pride. Mm-hmm. We're almost in June. We're a day away from June. It's May 31st. Yeah, May 31st. The reason that I'm here today and what were the Radical Shabbat, because happy Shabbat, it's Friday. The Radical Shabbat that we're having tonight is called No Pride in Israeli Apartheid, because we are talking about pinkwashing. And pinkwashing is an epidemic that happens more than just in Israel, but it's especially happening in Israel during Pride. And it's especially like... Going back to the Canary Mission hate, we have put out, we were able to use our super money and like the money from PSU and to pay for some ads to promote our events on Facebook, unfortunately, and Instagram. And unfortunately, because we were not the ones setting up the ads, because we were not the one paying for them, they put the audience to general instead of friends of friends, as I would have done if I was the one in control of it. And that has caused, literally, I have to check the Facebook page like every 30 minutes because there's just hordes of people posting the most vile Islamophobic things that I have ever seen in my life. And now I'll talk about why pinkwashing brings on Islamophobia, because it is so directly correlated, it's not even funny. Because, so pinkwashing, for those who aren't aware of the term, is basically the practice, because it's more than just Israel, it's when corporations, countries, or even individuals will espouse a lot of rhetoric around pro-LGBTQ plus, like, progressive stances, and they're like, look at how progressive we are. We love queer people. Look at all this. And in Israel's case, look at Tel Aviv. We're going to throw the biggest pride festival that you've ever seen. We're going to have all these things. Oh, but don't look at how we're oppressing Palestinians. Don't look at all our racist polities. Don't look at any of that. Just focus on how progressive we are. And that's something that we've seen. I mean, everyone in the U.S. and especially queer folk are probably seeing a lot of that right now with Pride and about all the queer capitalism. But this form is a lot more dangerous because Israel is doing this in an area and they're not just trying to say, look at how good we are, but they're trying to say, look at how good we are in comparison to all of these Arab countries around us. So that's what we've been seeing from, and while it's something that I don't want to see, and like I don't want to be inundated all the time, it's been a really good, like, it's been a good awareness builder about what these people think and what these people truly, truly believe about Israel and about these countries, because there's so many people that are just commenting on our No Pride in Apartheid ad, just being like, Islamophobia is a made up term. All of this is made up. This is fake. You're just like, I can't even repeat all this stuff. I don't want to repeat all this stuff. But just the level of deludedness that they've like that they are from this propaganda just shows about how pinkwashing directly ties to Islamophobia.
So I want to just come in here because I'm going to be part of the Pride festivities this summer. So
for the 16th that weekend?
Yeah. Mm. So I'm going to be doing a bit that I do called The Spirit of Sylvia Rivera. Sylvia Rivera is one of the people that actually started the Stonewall Riots. And this year is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots.
Beauty.
And it's important that we can speak honestly about what the Stonewall experience was about. Mm. Because sometimes you'll hear people like just say, remember Stonewall? And they just leave off the riot part or the rebellion part. And they just say, Stonewall. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the name of a bar. And it's in the West, it's in the West Village, and you know when you walk from West 4th down to the pier, which like every queer in New York City is supposed to do when you come out, or else. So you know, I was a teenager, you know, cutting high school to go there and like that, see people who are like me, right? Like that's how I realized I was trans and started transitioning from people that I met in the street. Mm. Anyway,
the radicals.
So yeah, the people who descend from Sylvia and Marsha. Yeah. Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia's best friend.
The beauty.
And they were fighting against police terror. Because at the time in New York City in 1969, it was illegal to be sort of publicly gay. And gay bars were not permitted. And the Stonewall Inn, which is where they were, was raided because at the time it was run by the mob. And the mob would usually know when the police raids are coming, and they would, you know, be able to put their money away, maybe make sure that they're not there, or anyone who they like, you know, because if they raid it, then whatever, whoever is in there can go. You know, they're just a bunch of queers anyway, right? And Sylvia Rivera was one of them that night. Mm. And she decided that she was going to fight back, which is what happens when you live under police oppression or military oppression, like what Palestinians are living under, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, it's not the same, but oppression is the same. So they were being tormented by the police as queer and trans people, just like Palestinians are being tormented by Israeli soldiers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all here. Mm-hmm. So the spirit of Stonewall is supposed to live on. So it's Stonewall 50, and I'm going to be doing an event at the Q Center that's going to be a little bit of an informational event called Stonewall 50.
What day is that?
That's going to be on the 28th. In that's the day. June 28th is the day. June 28th, 1969 is the day. So, but during Pride weekend, I'm going to be doing my bit, and it's called The Spirit of Sylvia Rivera, and I just, I enact or interpret one of her speeches. And
embody.
Thank you. Embody one of her speeches. And I want to speak to particularly people who want to celebrate Pride this year and every year. And it's good. We should.
Yeah.
Absolutely, we should. And
this is our time.
We should know that what we're not celebrating is vodka and
Svedka vodka with a rainbow label.
Yeah,
we're not celebrating that.
That's not what we're celebrating.
Mm-mm.
We're not celebrating insurance. We're not celebrating Amazon. We're not celebrating New Seasons, which just, you know, busted their union, and they have a float, you know.
No.
And we're definitely not celebrating the police.
Especially as someone who, so I, as you know, like I grew up in Seattle, like most of the prides that I've been to are in Seattle, and Seattle takes it to a whole other level when it comes to queer capitalism and the amount of presence that you see, because like just the parade itself, which is going right by the Seattle Center, like right down through the heart of downtown, they're just like Kaiser Permanente is just like throwing free stuff off of their flow. And like, they're just,
yeah, you should take some of that money and not charge your patients so much.
And maybe like actually provide services for queer and trans folk and not charge them out their wallet.
I mean, I go to the Gender Pathways Clinic at Kaiser, and it's good, but what makes it good is the people who work there,
not Kaiser. And I've
because
heard,
those they're underfunded, they're underpaid, they're overworked, they're understaffed, right? So they are fabulous people, but they're working under some pretty bad conditions, which is of course one of the reasons that we always support the workers on this show. And we, and especially shout out to SEIU and OFNHP, SEIU, Service Employees International Union, the local that's there, and OFNHP, the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Practitioners. Like, I love y'all, and thank you, because you're the ones that make it great. The program itself is underfunded, and they don't invest enough in actual wellness of trans people.
100%.
But here we are. Go on.
And that's, and just before we'll wrap that up, but just one thing about Kaiser, and just like those situations in general, like I've heard incredible things about the clinics that are in Portland, but I've also heard a lot of testimony when people have to go outside of the Portland area, that when you rely on just the incredible radical progressiveness of staff and aren't keeping it comprehensive across, like, at least about like creating like guidelines or things like that. Yeah. And then you go into these places that are in a little more rural and you're getting a completely different environment. And that's where it's most harmful, because it's like,
that's where people need the support the most, because they're most alienated.
The queer folk out there are the least supported. And then they go into these clinics and they may be misgendered and they may be just like brushed off. And that's entirely, it's so irresponsible. So it's just like to see these people.
And just so that people know, the term misgendered means that how you identify, the gender pronouns that you use and that are yours to claim are rejected by someone else, whether consciously or unconsciously. And it some people do not look like the gender that is.
They don't look like the stereotypes that we've been taught.
Yeah,
of what
so
gender looks
I mean,
like
that's a sad day when people don't respond to you with respect.
Exactly.
When you experience that. But that is what a lot of our friends and neighbors experience. And I just want to speak to that.
Always define terms, because a lot of times people feel so, especially speaking about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, people, I was just talking to my friend this morning who was like, "What? Wait, can you actually define what Zionist means?" And I'm like, yes, please always ask. Because so many times people feel intimidated and they feel like they will be deemed as not knowledgeable enough or not activist enough or not social justice aware enough. But like, we all started out there. We all had a starting off point. And if you, and it's like, not all spaces feel like create that like space to ask, but it's so important too.
And just so that people know, since you said someone asked what Zionist is, it's just it's an ideology that says that Jewish people, which you know, formerly before World War II, they didn't have their own state, and it was something that they, what many of them wanted. And most of them, of course, lived in Eastern Europe.
And the name for Jewish folks from Europe is Ashkenazi Jews, predominantly white, but not all. And then there's different kind of terms for that. There's like Sephardic Jews. But the big term that is important for most folks to know that don't know is Mizrahi Jews. And Mizrahi Jews are the Arab Jews that were living in Palestine. And that's the thing. Like,
before 1948.
Before 1948. And that's the thing. Like, that's, and they have been the most like co-opted by Israel of all. Because yes, there were Jews living in Palestine before that, but Israel has taken their existence and their culture and completely stolen it.
And it's important to note that it's not just that they took it, but rather that they were gifted it through European colonization.
And then
it's very important to know that they inherited it from a formerly occupying force.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the worst part about it is that now when we look at how Mizrahi Jews are treated in Israel, they are oppressed at the same, because this is the thing, when you have ideologies that are racist and completely about just like what people are looking like. If you look Arab, they don't care if you're a Mizrahi Jew.
Even if you are Arab and a Jew, and there are plenty of them.
There's plenty of them. There's plenty of Ethiopian Jews who face the same oppression. And it doesn't matter if you're Jewish in Israel, but if you're black or brown and you're not a Zionist who's like being tokenized, you face the same oppression. So not only did they co-opt the culture of Mizrahi Jews, and I say co-opt because they have turned, they don't call it Mizrahi culture, it's Israeli culture now.
Sure.
Israeli culture does not exist. Israeli culture is genocide. It's theft. And so these people who they have both like co-opted from are now in the same space, and they have been completely thrown to the wayside, and it's absolutely despicable. Yeah. So Zionism, while in its origin sounds like it's self-determination for the Jewish people, but when you think about that, if you're saying
at what cost is the
at
very
the what cost
question.
But also if you're saying that the Jewish people can only achieve self-determination by going to Israel and living in Israel, mm-hmm. you're completely discounting the value of diaspora communities, and that's what like that's what saved the Jewish people is the diaspora. And
I'm
like
from New Jersey.
You're from New Jersey and New York.
People
you
think
know.
I'm Jewish often because I just sort of act like a Yenta.
Yeah.
Because some of the
you
formative women in my
Yiddish.
Life, I speak Yiddish, as mm-hmm. it turns out. I just thought it was slang.
Yeah.
Because some women who helped raise me, shout out to Mrs. Wallerstein, my art teacher in high school, aww. Who was fabulous and helped me to get through high school because she would give me passes mm-hmm. for gym and my stupid elective and lunch and wow. all of these times. And I would just do my artwork and I would spend half of my day in the art room
oh my
because
God.
This old Jewish lady mm. saw that I was having a hard time and that I was being harassed constantly for being trans.
Especially in gym.
And she just wanted to help me out a little bit. So I just sat in there and made art with her.
Because that is
she's
Jewish,
fabulous.
That's Jewish values. And that and those Jewish values, like that is what Judaism preaches at its essence, but those have been so warped and twisted and now like that's not what's being taught in Israel. That's so different. And that's what's so frustrating is because Jewish values completely stand against everything that Israel is doing. And that's one of the most despicable parts of the whole entire equation.
And that's of course one of the prime motivators of the mission of Jewish Voice for
mm-hmm,
Peace
mm-hmm.
internationally.
100% because what people are so confused about and like not confused about, lied to, is that so, it's, oh gosh, especially, and I'm sure many have seen with the response to Ilhan Omar, is that we are told that it is anti-Semitic to critique Israel. And as a Jewish woman, I'm telling you, it is not anti-Semitic to critique a governmental body that is oppressing and enacting genocide upon a group of people. It's completely, it's a lie. It's 100% a lie. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitic. That's one, that was one of our Shabbat themes as well. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism because it's so convoluted and it's people are just confused about it and they don't want to sound oppressive. So they shy away from it because they're told that if they say the wrong thing, they're going to be oppressive, but they're not. It's not, it's like, it's anti-Semitic to like to relate Israel as being a Jewish body when it's a governmental system. Like that's not what it is.
Well, just during the elections,
mm-hmm.
Netanyahu, the prime minister, his party had a sign that said, "What was it? Israel is not for all of its citizens." What was the what
so
was the phrase?
He had it wasn't just a sign. He put out this nation state bill basically that was saying that Israel is basically the gist of it is that Israel is only for the Jewish people. And it's just a way because like Netanyahu is the worst of them all. Obviously we can tell that by his friendship to the Big Orange.
There are like 10 story posters of them.
Oh, they're BFFs. They love hanging
on
out.
On buildings.
Yeah. Actually Netanyahu renamed a settlement in the Golan Heights after Trump because Trump was like, oh yeah, Israel definitely has the rights to the Golan Heights. And we're
oh
like, no. That
say
has
what
been
the Golan
international-
Heights is.
So the Golan just- Heights is an area that is disputed because it was stolen by the Israeli government from the Syrian people. And it's been an area
conquered,
yeah. whatever.
It's a very right-wing term.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's it's been internationally like reprimanded for years. Even like Democrats like Obama were very much against Israel's presence in the Golan Heights. But of course, Trump comes in and he doesn't care about any of the history or what people say or anything. He's like, oh, my buddy Bibi Netanyahu, mm-hmm. yeah, he deserves to have the Golan Heights. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's naming a settlement after me? I'm just gonna keep going. Yeah. So at this point, he's so starved for people who love him.
And of course, the Golan Heights will not satisfy that beast.
Oh no, not at all.
There's no way.
Mm-mm. And it's just like, we see that, and we see how fascism love fascism, and that's the thing. They're both very much in that same ideology, and that's why Bibi put out that, or gosh, I'm not going to say that. Zionists love to call Benjamin Netanyahu Bibi, which is kind of a derivative of the Arabic word Habibi, which is like something, a term of affection, of dear one, and that kind of thing. But because Israel loves to co-opt Arab and Muslim culture, that has now been turned to talk about Bibi Netanyahu, our favorite, even though he's oppressive. Oh, he's not the best, but we still call him Bibi. And this is literally what I was inundated with when I was around these kind of people.
Sorry.
Yes, but also like, such a good learning point. Such a good learning point.
So talk about tonight.
Let's talk about tonight. So as I mentioned, tonight is called No Pride in Apartheid, and we're talking about pinkwashing. And basically, like, pinkwashing is so important to expose, because right now, like, when people see Israel and they see them espousing these progressive policies, especially queer people, it's so important for queer people to know. Because if you're not educated about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and you see that Israel is just doing all these events, you're like, oh, well, maybe they are progressive. And I don't want to go too much into this side tangent, but Israel also employs another tactic called greenwashing, which is basically the same exact idea, except about
environmentalism.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's, you can just see the vein that all of these are originating from. It's a distraction tactic. It's a propaganda tactic. And the worst part about it is, it's propaganda tactics that are feeding off of the oppression that queer people have been faced against for decades and centuries. And that's what's so frustrating to me. And that's what I was kind of ranting about a couple of days ago at the No Pride in Policing event that Portland State Student Union put on, is that, like, as a Jewish queer woman, it is so, like, painful and destructive to me to watch not only my Jewish heritage be used as this rationale for source of oppression, but now you're coming for the queer community and being like, oh, look at how oppressed you've been by Muslim and Arab societies, like talking about pretty pointedly Muslim and Arab societies.
Those people.
Those brown people.
Don't
we know
forget
who you're
that.
Talking about yeah. when you say those people. Like, look at how oppressed you've been. Come to Israel. You won't be oppressed here. And one of, like, so they enact this in so many different ways.
Not that they would accept Arabs.
No, not that,
no matter
if
you're
queer.
No matter
Arab,
how queer you are, if you're an Arab, no. you're not going to be able to no. go to Israel and enjoy
and
yourself.
Even if you're a black or brown person, because, like, one of the, like, sad but in
oh what they do
examples.
To Ethiopian Jews in Israel
oh,
is
that,
in
that was okay.
intense.
No, it's not only intense, it's actually horrific, because they told Ethiopian Jews, they were back when before 2000, when they were still trying to increase a lot of the immigration to Israel and they're trying to get as many Jews as possible, they were like, oh, Ethiopian Jews who has converted to Judaism like over 100 years ago, they are Jews, and they were like, come to Israel, you have a safe space, you're facing persecution in your home country, like, come to Israel. But as they, and like, not even touching on the amount of oppression that they faced when actually living in Israel, when they were immigrating, many of the women were told that they needed immunizations and they were given these shots, but they were not told, and there's heavy documentation of this, they were not told that these shots were actually sterilization, and they were sterilizing these women because they want a white Jewish society. They said they follow, so many people, so many of these like Zionist oppressive leaders follow the same like dogma of Aryan race, and it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. So not only do they, so that the Ethiopian Jews, the amount of oppression that they face is honestly horrible, and they've like Bibi, not, I can't remember if it was exactly Bibi, but it was someone in Netanyahu's party was talking about like how they don't even define, like they don't even see them as Jews because they converted, even though they converted over a century ago and have been living in Jewish societies and diaspora societies that they have created in Ethiopia and all throughout Africa, like just because they aren't fitting that like Sephardic or Ashkenazi profile, and that's why they're not deemed Jewish enough. It doesn't have anything to do about their practice or their like it just has to do about their skin color. And like that just speaks to the racism is real. And I was actually telling my friend this example this morning. It's horrible because I don't want anyone to ever have to like undergo oppression to understand a lesson. But one of the examples that I always tell people is about Azalea Banks. So Azalea Banks went to go perform a show in Israel, and so many people were like, please don't do this, like, don't like put your stamp of approval on this country, da 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 da.
It's one of the most important parts of BDS, mm-hmm. is helping famous people not go to perform.
And
in
so
Israel.
Many incredible.
It's an old tactic from South Africa.
Yeah, and so
it,
many
it worked.
And so many artists have like been so behind that and so supportive. One of the recent ones who wasn't is Madonna, who loves to just take pictures with all the IDF soldiers and everything and the leaders of government. Horrible. Anyway, so Azalea Banks went to go perform, and basically when people were telling her that, she was just like, I'm gonna do what I want, like I this is what I'm doing. And then she posts, like, all these tweets come out as she's leaving and is basically just like, I was profiled, all this horrible things were, all this racist things were said to me in the street, like, I am never going back to Israel, all this stuff. And to me, that shows that even people who come into that space trying to be, like, not trying to be looking for oppression or anything like that, and are literally just trying to be like, I don't care.
I'm just trying to make money.
I'm just trying to make money. I'm just trying to secure the bag, everything like that. Even those people, you will not be exempt from the kind of oppression because
if you're not white.
If you're not white, exactly. If you're not white, you will face that same ramp of oppression despite your views, even if you're not a leftist or anything like that, because it doesn't matter. It's a racist society and it doesn't matter. It doesn't. And that's like, it's horrible that people would still have to like to experience that, to understand that. But it's just such a poignant example because it just shows that it doesn't matter. Even if you're supporting Israel, they don't know that when they're just racist people on the street. They don't. So that's why it's such a big issue. And with pinkwashing especially, like people who may go there and think that they're going to be in this progressive society, they're going to get there and that's not going to be true. And like it's horrible that queer people have to learn that lesson that way, but it's going to be true. And it's so sad. It's so sad. And it goes against Jewish values 100%. But because of this oppression that they're faced and because of the immense pinkwashing propaganda that Israel espouses and because of their Jewish identities, this is where people are told that this is their only safe place. And this is why, like, there's a lot, like, especially, it's hard because with people like that who are running an entire organization, they know the other side. They know the other information. They just don't want to because also they get so much money. So much money. And I can compare as someone who's running an organization where we are not backed by the big bucks. We don't get flown to New York to stay in fancy Airbnbs and go to conferences. We don't get flown to LA to go to APAC for DC. APAC is a Israel policy conference that happens every April, May, and there's people like they have all the big political candidates come.
American Israeli.
American, yeah.
Political Action Committee.
Oh, nice acronym remembering. Yeah, like Donald Trump spoke there, Hillary Clinton spoke there, Kamala Harris spoke there. Like everyone's going to be there. The only person who hasn't is Bernie.
And but he's Jewish.
He's Jewish.
How fabulous is that?
I love
that. The most anti-Zionist candidate is Jewish.
Which, like, he's not outspokenly, but because, I mean, he has criticized, and, like, that's the most, like, just to not say anything
is outspoken.
Yeah, I think
he hasn't signed on to BDS, but he is calling for one of the demands, you know, equal rights.
Exactly.
For Palestinians.
And which is so much more than we've seen from any, like, Democratic or left candidate.
He needs to do better.
Yes.
So the three main goals is the equal rights for Palestinians, the right of return, and the end of the occupation. And that's the demands behind the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, which does work because it worked in South Africa, and South African people have been championing the Palestinian cause since the apartheid was active.
Because they recognize when apartheid is happening in other places
Great.
In the world.
Okay, just to establish that for people who say it worked in South Africa, but it can't work here.
No, it's not true.
It can and it must. Mm-hmm. And Bernie, for example, has to help. And it's good that he's where he is, but exactly. With all due respect, I think like Jewish Voice for Peace especially can be a force that helps him and everyone else, but especially
and
him
I
to
think
get
especially,
to a better position.
Like, I think he'll see that because Jewish Voice for Peace has been one of the biggest supporters of Ilhan Omar after she was facing all of those allegations, because they were completely unfounded. Everything that
and
she's,
racist
just, and Islamophobic, like all of it.
So it was so naked.
It was so clear. But that's the thing. It's so like at the same time, people are so scared about saying the wrong thing and about being oppressive themselves that they're like, if they're not Jewish, they're so scared to like say anything that it's not anti-Semitic.
But she's Somalian. And and the culture is a little bit more blunt, you know. So shout
that's
out to
thing.
All of my Somali friends.
Beautiful, it's so good. And that's the thing, like people like love her because of that bluntness and that candor.
She's I lived in Minnesota for 6 months when I worked on a city council campaign there. Ginger Jensen,
the
socialist,
campaign.
City council running in Ward 3. Mm-hmm. They use wards there, so it's location based. Which is, I need to speak to someone from Portland who wants to switch over to a location based system for our city council instead of at large seats. But that's another story. Anyway, she was a celebrity. I mean, when I would get into political conversations, and I was getting in political conversations every day, I was one of the main people who went to community events and just chatted up Ginger and socialism generally. And they would say, oh, yeah, do you know Ilhan Omar? And this is before she was elected to...
Three years ago?
This is just when she was in Congress in Minnesota. And they were just like singing her praises and wanted me to know all about her. People love her in Minnesota.
Because she's a real person. She is the least, and that's the thing, we're so inundated with fake personalities, especially in politics, that when people come across someone who is speaking truth and it's so obvious, that's just like an incredible rare, like a unicorn basically at this point. So it's 100%,
and it's why she has to be supported
and protected at all costs.
Absolutely. And people will of course notice that the Democrat Party was to say tiptoeing around supporting her is really generous when they
that's too generous.
I say that because I know that there are different takes in and around the party.
Exactly.
So I don't want to categorize them, but I'll just say...
Because it wasn't all of it. That's the thing. I respect that because it wasn't
best,
all.
At best, there was tepid support. At best, there was tepid support. And of course, at worst, they were saying, kick her out.
And they were saying, let's create an entire bill that is completely pointed at her.
Yeah.
Which is... That is, like... When you think about like the history of politics and what like that's no one has created a bill directed at one sitting senator. Like,
but who she is? She is a black Muslim woman who wears the hijab and who is against the occupation of Palestine
and
talks about the reason that she had to come here or that her family had to come here from Somalia is because of the ravages of colonization, which is something that, you know, a lot of times immigrants may not say because they want to seem grateful for being here.
And because they face so much like oppression.
They just want to have a good life.
If
and
they
who
complain,
can blame
they'll
them?
Be told to go home.
Yeah. And they just want to go along to get along sometimes. And it's like, you've been through enough. I understand.
Yeah.
But when someone who's from a colonized place moves into the belly of the beast, you know, sometimes they'll maybe tone down their critiques of the so-called USA.
Exactly.
And I like very much that she bucks that
because
trend.
Because she understands that that's the same reason why immigrants face so much oppression, because of how that truth is not exposed as much. And she and that's why like her words are so brilliant. I'm pulling up exactly the words that she was so like persecuted for.
Oh, thank you.
Because
while you're looking, I just want to say that She's also a very good example of a person who's Muslim and is so explicitly pro-LGBT. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that people in Minnesota mm-hmm. wanted to talk to me about, because I was working on the Ginger Jensen campaign during Pride season in mm-hmm. Minneapolis. And a lot of the queers who I was meeting, that they were extolling Ilhan, they were talking about how supportive she is of the queer and trans community. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, buck that trend too.
Exactly. You know,
like, Muslims are not homophobic.
No.
So, like, what are you even getting at here? But of course, I know what you're getting at. You're trying exactly. to make people support your Zionist games,
which has been one of the most, like, I was talking about how
Did you find the quote?
I can talk and look, but I was talking about, like, how earlier, like, I was seeing some of the Islamophobic things that people were saying specifically about, like, Muslim people and around queers, and it's just despicable how much that they're told. And that's the thing, like, a lot of these times these people are just told lies about that they're gonna face so much hate and oppression in Muslim society. And
Muslims,
like,
are not more homophobic than Christians.
No, not at all.
I'm not sure where this comes from.
Exactly.
And I'm looking forward to the iftar that I'm going to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like,
I've met so many more Muslims who have been way less discriminatory and everything, and are. And not less, but are avidly speaking against it because they understand sure. oppression, and they understand and don't want to enact it onto other people.
Sure. I mean, invite me to your Easter mm-hmm. at your conservative middle class white family's home mm-hmm. and let's see how much they like me and my behavior and my skin color.
Yeah.
Right? And my trans body. No. I'm not sure how much they're going to like me. And they may think I'm fabulous. They may not. If you take me to a Muslim home, they may think I'm fabulous. They may think I'm not. It's not mm-hmm. better or worse.
Exactly. But it's the amount. That's a good point, too, because there's way there. You will not see any of the same critiques from Israel towards Christianity, because there are
the pact.
There is a huge
Christian Zionism.
Huge
Whoa.
Portion of Christian Zionism, and if you look into the reason why there's so many Christian Zionists,
it says
it's
it in
so
Revelation.
Creepy. It's so creepy because they think the Jewish people need to be in Israel for the, like, next coming of age or the coming of Christ or something. So they just want to use the Jewish people as pawns, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you're getting behind this? Mm-hmm. And there's, oh God, I knew so many Christian Zionists, and they were all just, oh my God, talk about cognitive dissonance. But one of the most nefarious Christian Zionists, that person that I was speaking on before, this is like queer man, he would go to AIPAC, have to deal with these Christian Zionists who would be outright homophobic, and then he would just come crying and be like, why are they doing this? And I'm like, because they're
not in the same
oppressive.
Part of the propaganda machine that you're in.
No,
they're in, like,
he
a different chamber.
He was, like, progressive yeah. compared to them, and I was yeah. just like, oh yeah. my God. And that's the thing.
It's,
like,
one of the places where conservatives and liberals come together.
Oh yeah,
is an
exactly.
AIPAC.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why. And that's
you want to talk about working across the aisle.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so much more harmful for queer folk to be inundated with this, because you are literally being brought into hateful spaces. You are being told you're being brought into a progressive space. And you're not. You're gonna face homophobia. You're gonna face transphobia. All of it.
When you were talking about dual demonstrating, mm-hmm. when you were advertising for the Radical Shabbat tonight, mm-hmm. That you had the No Pride and Apartheid Ooh. Signs, but it was in conjunction yeah. with the No Pride and Police signs from Disarm PSU and the student union there. Mm-hmm. Shout out to everybody in the student union and the Disarm movement. You know, I'm going to have Olivia on my show. And
important.
I'm going to be talking about Disarm
and
leading
up
to some stuff around actions against against the board. Mm-hmm. By the way, Portland State University, their president has stepped down under pressure.
They're still paying him over $850,000 as part of his contract while they just increased tuition by 11%.
That was a little commercial for when Olivia comes on. Exactly. So thank you for giving Olivia a little boost.
Yeah, tune in next week.
Or whenever,
she comes.
She wants, whenever it works so that it's in lead up to the action against the board, we're going to do it. But I was hoping you could just talk about the
connection.
The connection and the alliance there, like No Pride in Police and No Pride in Apartheid together in conjunction for the kickoff of Pride at Portland State University.
Exactly. And there's so much connection. So thanks for bringing back that point and bringing us to that, because they're using the same oppressive tactics, and then they're also using the same deceptive tactics, because when you go to these Pride events, when we go to corporate Pride events, the cops are there handing out the same kind of stuff. And that's the same thing as the Israeli government giving you a free LGBT plus trip. Like,
when I see kids that have the gold police stickers, it breaks my heart.
Yeah, they take pictures with them and like all this stuff, and they look so happy and they're giving out free things, but then they turn around the next day and they'll harass like POC queer sex workers or trans women or anything.
They or anyone.
Anyone. Anyone who's being gay and doing crimes, even if you're not doing crimes, because you're probably not. They're just completely...
But visibly queer people are not generally
safe.
Treated well by the police.
Ever.
And spoilers, it's about to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the go-ahead from the Trump administration and
That's
all the
correct.
Militarization. So speaking on
and
that...
And don't forget about the Nazi on the force that was hired back on and given a bunch of money for the time that he was gone. But
exactly.
that's also another show. But just...
But we'll bring it back.
Yeah.
Because especially in this area, like in this vein... The reason these two situations are so similar is because they directly share tactics. So we spoke a lot on at that No Pride in Police event. We were talking with folks about the connection, because one of the other JVP national campaigns, which we've been doing a lot of preliminary work, and it's something to keep an eye out in the Portland area this summer and leading into the fall. But the Deadly Exchange campaign is a really important movement that's happening right now. And the Deadly Exchange is basically this program where police forces in the U.S. get paid for, mostly by Israel, also by the U.S., to go to Israel or to have IDF soldiers come and teach them further tactics of militarization. And they call it anti-terrorism training, but we know it's militarization training. We see the budgets. We see how they're using the money. We see what Portland Police has done in the last 5 years. And we know that it's relevant in our community because our very own chief outlaw went to Israel just last summer. And we had a couple of JVP members had a meeting with her about it. And honestly, she didn't, like, in this meeting, she didn't really know what that was doing and what the implications of that action were. So it's like, I want to believe that, and I want to believe that there will be change. But at the same time, I'm not going to hold my breath. Because this is still happening, and this is happening in Seattle. It's happening
across.
Got
her alliances. She can't say them out loud, but she's picked her side.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if she uttered it out loud, it would be like glass smashing.
Oh, it would be.
But we know she has picked a side.
It's clear. Your actions speak louder than words.
Sure.
Always.
Sure.
Always.
So the only, okay, let's go on. I want you to wrap up.
Yeah. That's the main idea, is that this alliance and this exchange is not only harmful in its implications of like signing on for apartheid and signing on for these oppressive tactics, but we're also like in a time where we're already seeing fascism on the rise and we're seeing increased militarization. It's furthering that. And it's furthering that like during its, and they're doing these same tactics at Pride. Like, they'll go to Pride one day and then maybe they're gonna get training from the IDF the next. We don't know. But we know that they get these trainings, so it's like, it's very freaking likely that that could happen. So it's just absolutely horrendous that we see this, and that at the same time, like, I'll give the big, my favorite quote to tell people, like, not only are we getting trainings from Israel in the US, like, the thing that I tell like U.S. citizens, whether you're Jewish or not, it doesn't matter. You have a vested interest in this conflict, because one of the biggest things of why people disengage, and what we heard when we were doing the BDS resolution on PSU campus 3 years ago, and I was in ASPSU at the time, one of the biggest things why people...
The Associated Students of Portland State University. It's the sanctioned student government.
Yes. And one of the biggest things that we heard at that time was, why are we talking about this? We're a student government. We shouldn't be talking about international issues. This is not relevant to us. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, it is incredibly relevant to all of us, because we give over $10 million to Israel a day, not in a year, a single day.
So you U.S. taxpayer-based money.
Taxpayer-based money. Yeah. And it's mostly for military support. And this is the thing. Israel does not need that money. They are doing fine. They have a good economy. They are not lacking in money. The reason that we're giving them that much is so that we can continue to have that military outpost in the Middle East, so that we can continue plundering for oil, control, threaten people with nuclear weapons, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why I tell people that, to show why you have a vested interest in this country, in this conflict, is because, I, especially for college students and for everyone, I'm sure we could think of a lot of better uses for that money. Because when we're being told over and over again that it's incredibly impossible for us to get free healthcare or free college tuition, it is ridiculous, because we are giving $10 million a day to Israel. So when the ASPSU senators who were like, this isn't relevant to us, no, it's incredibly relevant to us. We are seeing tuition increase after tuition increase because we don't have money from the state government. The state government would have so much money if the federal government was not giving $10 million a day to Israel. And this is the kind of point where going in, my big push right now for people when they're asking, what can we do? What can we do? Like, this is an international conflict. How do I engage? Right now, when you see that money, this is something, as we're moving into the 2020 elections, like, yes, it's going to be a long endurance sprint to get there. There's going to be a lot of conversations and a lot of variables that are coming up in between. But you need to be doing the research on what candidates are saying about Israel and what they want to do with that $10 million a day. Because if you want to see free healthcare, if you want to see something done about this climate crisis, which is going to completely change our landscape in less than 5 to 10 years, this is the time to be doing this research and to be advocating to the community around you. Tell your friends, your family, your colleagues, and everyone, this is not a complicated conflict. There is not a myriad of history. Like, there is history, and it is important to know, but you don't need to know that to understand the which side is the oppressor and which side is oppressed, which side is getting $10 million a day, and which side is living in an open-air prison where they can't even get clean water, sewage, people, CW, suicide reference, people are often just like...
That's content warning.
Content warning, so if it's disturbing. People
content warning,
are
suicide.
Actually, like, that's the only option they feel that they have because the situation is so desperate. So that's why I'm also pushing this, because the Palestinians don't have another election cycle. They can't wait that long. This issue is beyond overdue. And right now, we need to make sure that whoever is in the office in 2020 understands that. And we need to be advocating about that. This is going to be one of the issues of the 2020 campaign. We're already seeing that from what's happened with Omar. And people are predicting that a lot. Because it is, like, climate crisis, Israel-Palestine conflict, these are what's happening, and we need to be educating ourselves, and it's not that hard. Yeah. Like, it's intimidating, but there's so many resources. Self-plug, JVP-PSU, we are very active
on... Jewish Voice for Peace, Portland State University.
Yeah, we are very active on social media. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and the handle is just at JVP-PSU for all of those. So if you want to learn more from us, like, we try to do an educative stance on those platforms, and that's what we want to do, because we want it to be accessible to people. We don't want it to be this intimidating thing, because everyone has the capacity to learn more about this, especially the queer community. This is a required, basically, reading for anyone going into Pride festivals, because you need to understand it's okay to go to these Pride festivals.
You're being targeted.
Yeah.
So prepare yourself.
Prepare yourself and, like, understand what you're signing on for when you're at these places. And especially, like, understand how your community's oppression is being co-opted. And understand all of these aspects, because you are being used. And we don't want to be used anymore. We don't want to play a, like, bystander role in this anymore. We don't have the time, frankly. Like, we don't have the, like, it's not safe anymore. So at this point, it's just like, educate yourself, educate your friends. It's okay to go to Pride, but maybe, okay, not maybe, don't take pictures with the cops. Don't just take all the free stuff, and maybe talk to the people around you. Use it as an opportunity to educate more people and to bring people in.
Bring a sign.
Bring a good sign. Yeah, we actually at the...
you can get one from Jewish Voice for Peace, mm-hmm. PSU.
We'll have a ton at our event tonight, so 6 to 8 p.m. on PSU campus.
If you are someone who doesn't want to be complicit, mm-hmm. while you are there, pick up a sign.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be at Pride. We made some very beautiful No Pride in Apartheid signs.
So important.
I'll
Thank
be
you.
There with that sign.
They're beautiful.
And I'm hoping that people will use that and like see that as an opportunity to come talk and ask questions.
Excellent.
I want to answer all your questions, and I want to educate the folks that are around me, because that's the role that we all need to be taking at
Excellent.
This point.
Excellent. Again, that's JVP PSU. You are mm-hmm. Zia.
I am Zia.
Thank you for giving me your time and talking to me.
Thank you for having me and speaking on this issue.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I'll speak to you all next week.
Bye.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Black Queer Pride Celebration on Sunday, June 2nd, from noon to 4:30 p.m. at Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. The Black Queer Pride Celebration explores what it means to be Black, queer, and in Portland with a panel discussion, performances, and more to honor the resilience and uplift the voices of the most marginalized. Again, that's the Black Queer Pride Celebration on Sunday, June 2nd, from noon to 4:30 p.m. at Multnomah County Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cool art, live music, cider, wine, and snacks. Heck yeah.
Come out to KBOO's first ever First Friday Art Walk event on June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. The First Friday Art Walk is in Portland's vibrant East Side Arts District and is the gateway into Portland's thriving arts culture, including more than 23 independent galleries.
Start your night off at the KBOO Studios next First Friday, June 7th. KBOO is featuring the work of two brilliant artists, Justin Auld and Amy Kutab. There will be live music, snacks, wine available thanks to Hip Chicks Do Wine and Cider courtesy of Cider Riot.
You will also get a chance to tour our studios. Check out kboo.fm for more info. That's Friday, June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. See you there.
And you are tuned to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. KBOO Community Radio has been broadcasting in Portland since 1968. Not only do we provide thought-provoking news, live performance, and excellent music, we provide broadcast, training, and access. We're asking you to help us celebrate KBOO on by voting for us on Willamette Week's Best of Portland poll. We've been nominated for Best Radio Station. For more information, including a link to the poll online and category suggestions, go to kboo.fm/vote KBOO. And now stay tuned for